Good to see you guys here today. I'm Kevin. I'm the lead pastor here, and I find myself in a little bit of a bind this morning because we're preaching about hope, and I feel that for this message to have integrity, I at least have to mention the homeless people that are living outside in the cold as we're in the warmth here today. So the difficulty of this is that as we proclaim hope, we need to be aware that we aren't just proclaiming words of hope, but hope is action as well. You know, and I know the situation is complex. I've participated in the Journey Home Task Force a bit, heard the discussions. I know there's a five-year plan. There's an emergency meeting next week that I'm going to be a part of, which I think is good. I find this conversation very difficult because people raise a solution and immediately raises two problems. So where we're at today is we are a church who I know we make a difference. We have three addictions programs that run here. Every day we have an addictions program that runs out of our facility. We've had relationships with Freedom's Door that I think have been very positive and are increasing in that relationship. But there's a sense still that we wonder if we could do more. So that's kind of the bind that we're in today as we think of the people who are out in the cold. And I just want you to be aware of that for this message about hope to have integrity, we need to be aware that we need to be people that take action as well. So after the service, I'm going to be somewhere up here. And if you want to be part of a discussion, we'll just talk and see what we can come up with, and just, we don't have to come up with anything really, just want to share your heart, that's fine. So we're going to talk about hope today, okay? And I want to say that hope is about living in the present in light of the future. Hope makes an impact on our daily lives. I was reading an interesting article about athletes and pain. Because some sports at high levels, it's not so much about how good you are, it's about how much pain you can take. It was an interview with some famous athlete, I actually forget his name, but the question was asked, how do you deal with the pain? How do you keep going when it's so painful that others would quit? And he said he can get through the pain because he knows that no matter what happens, he's going to be in his bed that night. I thought that was really interesting. So as he's struggling, he says to himself, this has an ending. I need to endure this, knowing that tonight it will be a memory. Tonight I will be sleeping in my bed. Maybe a step down or two from the elite athlete. I'm talking about myself here. Maybe one step down. But for me, when I'm going up a hill on my bike, sometimes I'm just hating life. I have thoughts like, why in the world am I doing this? I thought this was supposed to be fun. This is stupid. I'm getting off my bike. But I don't, because I'm on Strava and I don't want my friends to have a faster time than me. But in addition to that, it's knowing a bit about the future. That hill I'm going up, I know it ends, and after two turns, it's going to turn into a downhill, and that keeps me going. If I had no knowledge about what might be, what might come in the future, I would get off my bike, crack open a Coke, and eat a chocolate bar. Guaranteed. If I could have a cold one, that would be awesome. Coke, cold Coke. Hope is about living in the present in light of the future. And a hope that doesn't impact your daily life isn't true hope. Hope permeates all aspects of our lives. It becomes the air we breathe that fills our lungs. And true hope isn't about just waiting passively for something to happen. True hope changes everything. True hope has an impact on the present, on the decisions we make, on the way we live our lives. There is some news, there are some events that just seem to change everything. Years ago, early in the morning, before work, I was watching the news. And I was watching, the regular news was interrupted with this breaking news, and these reporters were all standing on the streets, and the scene switched. And they were reporting about this plane crash that was just horrific. It was tragic. But as they were talking, reporting on this tragedy, wondering how it could happen, in the background, another plane came into view and at high speed swerved and crashed into the World Trade Center. I'll never forget that moment. It was absolutely stunning to see those two towers, which were symbols of New York, symbols of prosperity, symbols of power, have these holes in them where these jetliners just disappeared and there's just a black hole. One moment there was a jet flying in the sky, and the next there was just smoke, and this hole in the building was just gone. It was horrific. And all those lives on the plane instantly extinguished, and the people in the tower suffering and dying. And I think for me and my generation, that put a mark on us. That defined us a bit. It added to the feeling of hopelessness and jadedness that many people who are part of what's called Generation X already felt, that the world was hopeless and there wasn't much of a future. I remember leaving for work after seeing that and thinking, is it actually appropriate for me to go to work today? This feels really weird. I was in complete shock. I was looking up into the sky, looking at the planes, thinking they were going to come crashing down, almost expecting this to happen at any moment. And you know, that event of manifested hatred shattered lives and dreams and hopes. That event, the news of that event, changed everything. We were in a new world, and it seemed to be a world without hope. We aren't the first generation to receive news that seems to impact everything, and we won't be the last. The advent of hope begins with news. Many, many, many generations ago, in the 8th century BC, the prophet Isaiah was sharing news with his generation. It was news that would change everything. It was news that was far greater in its impact than the events of 9/11. Yet the people were having a difficult time hearing this news. It was difficult to comprehend. They were a people who were conquered. They were beaten down. They had lost hope and maybe didn't believe such a thing as hope even existed. This is why. The world was being rocked by military aggression. People were being conquered and put into slavery. Their sons and daughters were being separated and killed and captured. The cities were being destroyed and burned. And can you imagine the despair? I mean, I try to enter into that a bit and imagine my home being burned to the ground with everything in it. And then soldiers take your sons and daughters to separate places, separate husbands and wives. And if you're lucky, you were all herded together to something like a prison camp or ghetto for your new life. Everything you have known is gone. All the dreams you had connected to the old way of life are gone. Your relationships are gone. And all over the place, you see the face of the oppressors living in luxury on your backs. That's the kind of life God's people were introduced to in the time of Isaiah. It was a world power known as Assyria that was on this rampage of military conquest, and the small player kingdoms of Judah and Israel didn't stand a chance. Samaria, the capital of the North Kingdom, was besieged and captured, and all the people were taken. Judah and Israel were all also invaded, and their towns were burned and destroyed to rubble as the Assyrians went through. And I don't know how you would be doing if this was happening to you, but it would rock me and change me. I think it would usher in despair. It would make it very difficult to hear words of hope, let alone live in hope. Yet, a voice cried out, a voice in the wilderness. It cried out in the stillness and hopelessness and despair. Prepare the way for the Lord! It rang across the land. It was a voice of prophecy that rang out in the despair of God's people. Speaking for God, something was about to happen. That may have got their attention. But still, they were stuck in captivity and despair and didn't know how to hope. But there's more. This news was earth-shattering for them and changed everything. It was a reminder. It was a declaration of hope. This is what they heard later on. This is Isaiah chapter 40, verses 28 to 31. We heard this earlier. I'm going to read it again. Have you never heard? Have you never understood? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of all the earth. He never grows weak or weary. No one can measure the depths of his understanding. He gives power to the weak and strength to the powerless. Even youths will become weak and tired, and young men will fall in exhaustion. But those who trust in the Lord will find new strength. They will soar high on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. Haven't you heard the news? Don't you know what's happening? This changes everything. On September 11th, 2001, the news traveled fast. The people who weren't watching the news were told by people who were, and those people in turn told other people. And the news spread like fire through a dry forest. But still, there were some people who did not know, who were going about their lives and doing things and living their lives oblivious to this news, like nothing happened. I remember some people at the place we were working at who were just going about business as usual, unknowing, unseeing, unhearing. To them, it was just another day. They did not know that air travel would be forever changed. They did not know about the seed of mistrust and hatred planted in the psyche of the West. They did not know to look up into the sky and watch the planes with fear and desperation. They didn't know. They had not heard. This is to the Hebrews, to God's people. Haven't you heard? Do you not know? Don't you understand? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of all the earth. He never grows weak or weary. No one can measure the depths of his understanding. He gives power to the weak and strength to the powerless. This changes everything. Now, the difference between this news as compared to 9/11 was that the voice crying in the desert ushered in a new era of hope, not despair. It was reason to believe, reason to keep going, reason to walk with their heads held high. There is hope. And they so desperately needed that news. They felt like an abandoned, forgotten, powerless people. You know, all those stories about God, all those promises to their ancestors, all those accounts of miracles, they must have thought they were just myths from a long time ago. If there was a God, he sure had forgotten about them. Maybe it was time to shop for a new God or new gods. Yet that voice crying out in the desert awoke them from this despairing stupor. God has not forgotten. The God of Israel, He is the one true God, and He is your God. He is the one who is on the side of the weak, the powerless, the abandoned, and the despairing. And to those, He offers hope. So here we are today, reading those words of hope, written so long ago to a people so short on hope. How does that have anything to do with us today? I'm not sure if Isaiah actually understood everything he saw. Sure, he spoke God's words, but did he understand the reach of those words at his time? Did he understand that this went way beyond the kingdom of Judah and the people of Israel? Did he understand that God's plan of redemption would continue to unfold until the coming of Jesus? I don't think he did. Those words were spoken to the people at that time and gave them hope. But probably never in his wild imagination did he understand that the hope being offered wasn't just about the tense political situation with the Assyrians. Wasn't just about having new homes built for his people. Wasn't just about new jobs instead of slavery. His words and vision went way beyond what we just read. Isaiah had amazing, inspiring, hope-filled visions that we see through the lens of the incarnate, crucified, and risen Jesus Christ and his plans for all of creation. But he saw them through a much smaller lens. He had other visions. He had visions of the throne room of God with the thundering of the seraphs, where he was struggling with this overwhelming sense of unworthiness. And then having the glowing stone, the hot coal taken from the altar of the throne room, touch his lips, and his guilt is atoned. He's made clean. That was hope, and that went way beyond him. I don't know if anyone could really understand the magnitude of this hope until the coming of Jesus. But as we look back, we do so maybe with an even greater clarity than the prophet Isaiah himself was capable of. Because we understand his descriptions of God, his words about God, through the revealing hope of the nations, Jesus Christ. Because we have been introduced to the living Word of God. Not the Bible. The Bible attests to the Word, but Jesus, who is himself the Word of God, the Word who became flesh. Have you never heard? Have you never understood? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of all things. And this is the advent of hope. These are words of hope, and hope changes everything. Now, it seems to me that people who are always buying lottery tickets are people desperate for hope. Desperate for their lives to change, maybe. I think lottery addiction is a real thing. Maybe this time I will win. I think it's some kind of addiction of escapism to a future fantasy. I've had those dreams, those fantasies. I imagine what my life would be if I won the Lotto Max. I would buy a nice car. Nothing too fancy, just like maybe a McLaren or something like that. And I would buy a nice house, something comfortable and interesting and fun with an indoor pool and a gym. And of course, what always enters into this fantasy is this rationalization. Wow, I'm a great person and I would give so much of that money away. I would just be so generous. I would change everyone's lives with the money if I win. God, maybe you should make me win. It seems that we interact with hope like we do with a lottery ticket. Just a wish for the future. Something passive. Just a gamble. Just a dream. I sure hope I win. But hope isn't like that. It's faith in action, and it should saturate every aspect of our lives. When we have hope, our actions, our decisions, our attitudes, our relationships are informed by the action of faith. That's what hope is. It's the action of faith. You know what hope means? It means that we live our lives in the present with a perspective informed by the future. It means that when all that stuff happens, earth-shattering news, all the way to daily disappointments, that we live the present, interpret the present in light of what we know by faith of the future. Hope is faith in action, and it changes everything. Hope is faith in action in relationships. It means that we trust that God is working, and we choose to love people, to stick with people, even when we don't want to stick with them. When without hope, we would give up. Hope is faith in action in giving life meaning. It means that our work and our play in our neighborhoods, what we do, has meaning. Because we see all the potential of what God is doing in and around us. Hope is faith in action and being sold out for Jesus and aligning our lives with His purposes that goes way beyond our needs. It's aligning our lives every day, daily decisions through the greater purpose beyond our own satisfaction. You know, the opposite of hope is despair. And despair comes from living a life that is only about serving yourself and discovering that this is meaningless and unsatisfying because there is no hope in it. We can live for things that suck the hope right out of us. We can live for things that we need to be freed from. We can live for our parents, for our friends. We can live for money or power. We can live for religion and be empty. We can live for personal ambition and feeling good. But ultimately, it's empty and leads to despair. Hope reaches beyond our wants and desires to something bigger and better for our lives. Faith gives us hope in the right things. It lifts us up above our mess in this vicious cycle of selfishness and disappointment by uniting us with Jesus and giving us and filling us with His Spirit. Hope changes everything. What are you hoping for? What are you living for? Because here's the thing, no matter where you're at, no matter how young or how old, no matter how rich or how poor, no matter how together or how messed up, hope changes everything. And there is hope. Haven't you heard the news crying out across the land? The news declares that this beautiful mess we live in, life, has meaning and purpose. And it's not just one big cosmic accident. The news declares that there is a force of goodness beyond humanity that is working below the surface, on the surface, and above the surface to heal a broken land. The news declares that this force is so good, it's willing to do anything to express that love. God, the creator of the world, loves us, loves you. He gave himself for us. He offers freedom from captivity. He has won the victory over the forces of evil. He offers us life abundance by following him. Jesus offers hope. Have you heard the news? Hope changes everything. Maybe life for you feels like you're going up an endless hill, and it hurts. It's the hill of broken relationships. It's the hill of addictions. It's the hill of our mistakes following us and pursuing us everywhere we go. And there seems to be no way out. No purpose and no end to the suffering. But hope means this. No matter what we go through, we know that there is something more and something greater and something bigger. And we face those things in the light of God's future promises invading the present. So I hope today, as we celebrate this first Sunday of Advent, hope that we can leave here inspired to live in the fullness and abundance of life that the gospel promises us and speaks out and cries out to us. Have you heard the news? Jesus has come. Hope changes everything.